Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Monday, May 6th, 2024. Lawmakers from South Sudan are planning to visit Restif Tumbura County following continued ethnic violence.
If we go now, there's nothing that we can do. That is why the priority for the national government was to send the Division 6 commander so that he can counter the fighting.
And some employees of South Sudan's Nile Petroleum Corporation are not happy.
We call on our president that we have some people in the system who will be able to address our issues rather than the person who is currently in the office. This person must be taken out because he is not able to run the company.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's National Legislative Assembly has formed a committee to investigate the root causes of the ongoing ethnic violence in Western Equatoria's Tumbura County. A member of parliament representing Tumbura County at the National Assembly in Juba has accused forces loyal to South Sudan's first vice president for the ongoing violence in Tumbura. Clement Juma Mugonwea says the state government in Yambio has done very little to bring calm to Tumbura County.
We have a sitting this morning in which I presented a motion regarding the situation in Tumbura. One is that over the last 1 week, there has been a very rampant killing of innocent civilians. And it started by targeting community leaders or chiefs who are responsible for the people.
We have been following that situation closely with the Catholic Church. There was a priest who spoke with us from St. Mary, and he narrated exactly what you're telling me. But the question that begs an answer is, what are state and national government doing to arrest this situation? Everybody is...
We have raised the issue with the national government, and in the last 3-4 days, Division 6 commander was deployed to Tumbura just to stabilize the situation, and he has been doing well. To some point, he deployed soldiers on most of the hot spots, I understand. And the aim of that is to calm down the situation and to make sure the firearms that are in the hands of wrong people are collected. At the level of the National Assembly, there are two important issues involved. One is the issue of the insecurity, the rampant insecurity, which have resulted with the killings and the missing people. That include the priest, the Catholic priest. And then the other issue is, of course, as a result of these attacks, civilians have been displaced. And their number is very big. We are talking about 41,000 to 42,000, and it is on rise. Means they need emergency relief assistance. And they remember it is a rain season where everybody is supposed to be cultivating, and now the villages are not safe. You cannot go out of Tumbura town 1 kilometer without being attacked. The parliament this morning passed a resolution appointing a 9-man committee who are member of parliament but from different states. We resolved that none of us should be part of that committee.
Tumbura is on fire, and the people who are supposed to put the fire off are sitting and meeting, and you're telling me they will go there in a week's time. Shouldn't that be the opposite? Shouldn't you people go to Tumbura and convince the people who are on each other's necks to stop, as opposed to meeting in Juba?
I need to put this in perspective. Who are the people fighting? The people who are fighting are IO forces that are based in Namutina and the surrounding areas. Who are they fighting? They are fighting civilians. So if we go now, there's nothing that we can do. That is why the priority for the national government was to send the Division 6 commander so that he can counter the fighting. The next step will now be the political aspect of it, the diplomatic aspect. This is where somebody like me can go. If I go now to Tumbura, I may even be a victim.
Yeah, you have all the reasons to be careful. The IO, you're just telling me these are IO forces fighting civilians. IO is not on this interview to defend themselves. But have you spoken to leaders of IO? Have you spoken to leaders of IO to tell their forces to stop attacking civilians in Western Equatorial State?
Yes, as a parliament this morning, this is what we raised in the parliament, because we have records from people in Tomura telling us the people who are fighting us are coming from areas of Namutina. And in Namutina, there is nobody there else. There is an IO. The priest who went missing, he means in an area that is controlled by IO. So unless there is a contrary view to this, it is believed that IO is behind this. So we need IO to come clear and say, no, these people do not belong to us. This is where they can, we can see who exactly is doing this. And that is why, since a number of IO in parliament, some of them say, no, it may not be them. That is why the parliament decided to send a neutral member of parliament to them and establish the fact.
I grew up in Yambio and Maridi, and during my time, these issues of ethnicity were non-existing. And I have to agree with you that Western Equatoria has been one of the peaceful areas in South Sudan. Given the history of its, you know, coexistence and peaceful coexistence, rather, what should be done moving forward?
I believe it's a question of governance, because if you have peace yesterday, before the peace agreement, the place was peaceful. And now you have a government, and the government, like any other government, have responsibility to take care of its citizens and their property. And now these citizens are not being taken care of. Someone is killing them, burning their property, and you claim there is a government. So I would say the matter is really about governance. Is Western Equatorial State having a government to begin with?
Have you spoken to Governor, as you rightly put it,
he doesn't talk to me for one reason or the other. He cannot talk to me.
Why? Why would Governor Putu not talk to you? You are a member of parliament in the area. You're supposed to hold him accountable.
I tell the truth.
Honorable Clement, you're supposed to hold him accountable. This is your role, oversight role, is to hold him accountable.
And he doesn't want that accountability.
Have you spoken to him?
He doesn't want that
accountability. Have you called him?
He wants to do things with impunity. If I call, he doesn't pick my call.
That's Clement Juma Mbogoniwia, a member of parliament representing Tomura County at the National Legislative Assembly in Juba. He spoke with me from Juba earlier today. Still on Tomura, communities in Ryuyubu are asking the national and state government to speak up about the disappearance of a Catholic priest in Tomura County. George Ganun, head teacher at Don Bosco Primary School in Ryuyubu Payam, which is also the hometown of the missing Catholic priest, says authorities from the state have not given clear information on the disappearance of Father Luke Yugwe. Ganun says more needs to be done to locate the priest.
People are not in good mood, because this has caused the kind of tension to the people, to the entire community of South Sudan, because he was the son of this place and he was grown up here until he went to seminary, and then he became abuna among his people here, among the parents, among the relatives. So very suddenly we had that, you know, Father Luke is disappeared on the way to Niger.
What are local authorities saying? Is there any word about where he is?
Exactly. Up to now, the government is trying to find out where he is, and then even the local authorities, the chiefs, they are trying to know from the government to know where he is about. So it is still on the process. So the committee are also looking to hear from the government so far what has happened to him and who abducted him on the way to Najoro.
Are there community leaders who are questioning the state government, the government of Western Equatoria, or the national government? Are there efforts by the community leaders to hold authorities accountable?
Exactly. We have the Payam chief, even the county chief, the paramount chief, and the commissioner. So they are trying to find a way from the government of the Republic of South Sudan, let him, because he's the top authority in the country, to make effort so that at least to get information about the Father Luke. So there is a process going on.
How do you feel about this situation? What is happening in Tomura County? How do you feel about it?
It's like a disaster to people, because now you see this thing has caused attention to people. Like now, you know, this time is a season for maybe planting things, for going to the garden. People are not working anymore. No garden, there is nothing that can help people like food. People are camped in the Unimist camp and others in the churches. So people are feeling really very bad about all this, what is happening in Tombora.
From Yambio to Tombora and from Tombora going to Najero or to South Cebu, how safe are these roads?
So the road is a bit safe because there is no more tension on the road. There is no more abduction from Tombora to Yambio. It is fair because we have two roads which is going to Yambio. One which is going via to another junction called the Diabio, and then another one from Sorsiubu to Ezo to Diabio, and then going to Tombora. So the road from Sorsiubu going to Ezo to Yambio is a bit fine, but that one going direct from Tombora to Yambio is a bit not fine because people are fearing sometimes they can abduct people on the way, they can maybe attack people also. You don't know who is attacking the people.
You and I are both from Western Equatoria and we know ourselves. How can you say you don't know who is attacking people?
The problem is this thing is just happening in the bushes where there are no people, where there are no residents. So this is why now it is very difficult to identify who is attacking, who is abducting people on the way, because it's happening in some places where there is no residents.
That's George Ganun, head teacher at John Don Bosco Primary School in Lee Yubu Payam. He spoke with me earlier today via phone from South Yubu in Tambora County. Security forces in the South Sudan's capital, Juba, stopped a planned demonstration today by employees of the Nile Petroleum Corporation. The staff working for South Sudan's National Oil and Gas Entity accused the head of the company of cutting salaries by 50% and suspending other allowances. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
Bernard Amor, managing director of the Nile Petroleum Corporation, says the company was forced to cut employees' salaries due to what he calls the region's geopolitical situation, including the conflict in neighboring Sudan. His staff of the Nile Petroleum Corporation had planned to walk off the job on Monday and come outside the company's headquarters in Juba. That did not happen due to heavy deployment of national security officers and police around the company's offices. One employee who spoke to VOA on condition of anonymity for fear of reprisal says the workers will continue to speak up for the rights.
This person has brought heavily armed forces, and I've seen there are some people who are arrested. But what was planned, we are going to follow it. I'm one of the people who came here to ask for my right. I didn't come here for violence and all that.
Bernard Amor, managing director for the Nile Petroleum Corporation, spoke to reporters over the weekend, saying the company was forced to cut employees' salaries due to the crisis in Sudan.
It was a very informative decision, and it was also a decision that makes sure that everyone is not losing his or her job. But generally, that was the best option for now. Of course, if the situation continues to go the way it is, other options will also, will have to come in.
Amor says the staff at Nile Petroleum are lucky to receive salaries on time compared to other government employees who wait for months to get paid. Another employee who spoke to VOA on condition of anonymity for fear of reprisal says President Salva Kiir should remove the company's managing director.
We call on our president that we have some people in the system who will be able to address our issues rather than the person who is currently in the office. This person must be taken out because he is not able to run the company. Since he came, nothing good has happened. He has been telling us lies after lies.
Christina, who prefers to use her first name only due to fear of government reprisal, says the pay cut enforced by company's management has dramatically affected her income.
I am one of the cleaners, and the company has reduced my salary from $600 to $400. I want my salary to remain as it was. It is through this money that I feed my children and pay school fees for my children, as I have no husband. If they cut it again, what will I use to pay the school fees?
The Nile Petroleum Corporation, or NilePet, was established in 2003 to link oil companies with the government of South Sudan. After the signing of the 2005 Comprehensive Peace Agreement, NILPET continued as a commercial entity representing government interest in all consortiums of the country's oil sector. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayer in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, a United Nations feeding program is helping students. Find out where after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. A school head teacher at a Catholic school in Western Equatoria State says feeding program introduced by the UN's World Food Program has led to an increase in school enrollment, retention, and improvement of students' performances in the state capital, Yambio. He says St. Bakita is planning to hire more cooks to cater for the hundreds of students at his school. Juliana Shiapai recently visited Yambio and reports for VOA from Juba.
The World Food Program is buying food from local smallholder farmers to feed students as part of a local school feeding program. Angelo Ateny Awach, who runs the St. Bakita Nursery and Primary School in Yambio, says more students are attending school since the feeding program began.
So under the health of the children here, there is no any report in my office. Sometimes I can spend like a month. That's why I can experience the report that a child is sick. So this, the health of the children are good because they're eating balanced diet.
Bidali Emmanuel Justin is a 16 years old who is preparing to write exams for entrance to high school. Bidali tells VOA the feeding program has helped him to focus on his studies.
It is helping us in a way that in the school here, if you come to school without eating food, you can come and find the food in the school here, and it is helping us. We can be just satisfied at any time. We can stay in the school until the departure time. So it is helping us even to get some knowledge, because when you are hungry, you will not even learn. You will not be listening to the teacher. But we are now even listening to teacher. Even time for lesson, we are not out. We are always inside in the class.
Student Jane Mijay Dominic also says the feeding program helps her continue with her studies at St. Bakita Nursery and Primary School in Yambio.
Because when I was in the world there, this problem was not there. But here I'm enjoying the food and even I'm the comfort. I'm very happy with and I'm very active with this school because there is food. Because if food is not there, I'll not become here. I'll go to another school.
The matron and gender protection officer at St. Bakita Nursery and Primary School says the feeding program is keeping girls in school. Nora Justin Betty says, although the number of girls attending schools here is high, some girls still miss school because of a lack of sanitary pads.
Most of my girls, their parents are not providing for them like the monthly requirements. This is making them like when a girl is on administration, at times she remains at home. When they send her to me to investigate her, she'll tell me, madam, I was on my monthly period and I had no pad to come to school. That's the first challenge that I'm facing. I don't know.
Simon Butter is one of the many traders trained by WFP to support and provide food items to St. Bakita Nursery and Primary School. Butter says the current economic crisis has forced some traders to stop supplying the school because they are afraid of losing money due to South Sudan's hyperinflation.
The school comes with the list, and then we make the budget. When we make the budget, then we will start supplying the school. But we do it 50-50 because when we supply the school, sometimes within demand finished within 1 week, so the dollar went up. So automatically the price of the things also become change in the market. So this is the problem make my other colleagues of traders refuse to supply the school. But with me, I used to manage like this.
The head teacher at St. Bakita Nursery and Primary School in Yambio adds that support from the World Food Program not only helped his school, but has boosted local sales and has empowered private institutions like banks. For VOA News, I am Juliana Shepai in Juba.
From Juba, we move to East Africa, where some residents of Nairobi's suburbs are up in arms over what they call is illegal construction of high-rise buildings in their estates, mainly by Chinese contractors. Juma Majanga reports from Nairobi.
In Nairobi's Kilimani suburbs, residents like Cherotich say are pondering their next move to stop what they say is illegal construction in their estate.
What we are suffering from now is unplanned construction. If you don't have sewage, you don't have wider roads, you don't have fire stations, you don't have enough schools, you don't have hospitals, all you're doing is just building and building and building accommodation without the requisite planning.
Kilimani is one of the areas where residents are speaking out against the construction of high-rise buildings. Architect Alfred Omenya heads urban development consultancy EcoBuild Africa.
A lot of the buildings that we are seeing around here do not even meet that same City Hall's development control requirements. And they're approved in City Hall. They're actually approved in City Hall. And I can say this without fear of contradiction. For donkey years, City Hall has been the citadel of corruption.
Cherotich claims Chinese firms are using corrupt practices to circumvent legal procedures.
And I really call out the Chinese Property Developers Association here. They're complicit. They have understood the propensity and appetite for corruption that you find in this county, and they have exploited it to the hilt.
City government officials declined VOA's request for comment, and Chinese builders did not respond to VOA's request for a response to the claims. Economist XN Iraqi, however, says Chinese contractors have brought efficiency to the construction industry.
Lest there be competition. I think that is going to raise the Kenyan construction industry and the Kenyan expertise are going to run something. In the long run, the customers are going to benefit because there's no competition. We shall do shorter work, we cannot be efficient.
The Kenyan constitution requires involvement of citizens on governance decisions on issues that affect them. Henry Ochieng is the chief executive officer of the Kenya Alliance of Resident Associations.
Whereas the law provides very elaborately about public participation and we have adequate legislation around that, but the practice itself is still being done as a lip service. We still have the government officers calling for public participation when they've already made a decision. So they're doing it just to tick the boxes.
Heavy rains and deadly flooding in Kenya recently are compounding problems caused by unplanned construction, says Omenya.
By the time you have those high-rise buildings, you are not likely, especially in these areas where we're looking at 1 acre development, the entire space is going to be concrete. Where does that water go?
And as the World Bank projects 70% of the global population will live in cities by 2050, experts say planning will be key for cities like Nairobi. Juma Majanga, VOA News, Nairobi.
That's all we prepared for you for this Monday, May 6, 2024. We now leave you with Emmanuel Kembe and the song Zamankuruju Ja. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our team, producer Kwame Ofori and engineer Chang, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
buruju.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The global economy is doing far better than expected now, but the geopolitical situation is in a recession, according to World Economic Forum President Birger Brende. This is a moment of particular challenge, agreed Secretary of State Antony Blinken, because in many ways we're at an inflection point.
There are fundamental changes taking place in terms of geopolitical competition, but also global challenges that no country can effectively address alone, where the decisions that we make in these moments are likely to have repercussions not just for the next few years, but for decades to come.
For the United States in this moment, said Secretary Blinken, we can't effectively do and meet these challenges alone, as large and as powerful as the United States is. That is why the United States is revitalizing, reimagining, reinvigorating alliances, partnerships around the world. Two quick examples, said Secretary Blinken.
On Ukraine, we were able to bring so many countries together, not just in Europe, but beyond, because countries recognized that there was an aggression not only against Ukraine, but against some of the foundational principles of the international system. And if we let that challenge go with impunity, then it was likely that would-be aggressors everywhere would take note, and we would have a world of more conflict, not less conflict.
In Asia, we have the most consequential and in many ways complicated relationship with China, said Secretary Blinken.
We've approached it from a position of strength. The aspects where we're competitive, the aspects where we're cooperative, the aspects where we're contesting. And that strength has to do with the fact that there's now greater convergence than at any time I can remember between us, key partners in Europe, key partners in Asia, and in other places on approaching some of the challenges posed by China.
It's really two sides of the same coin, said Secretary Blinken. One is that we're determined that countries continue to look to the United States to be engaged and to lead. The other side of the coin is that more than at any time since I've been involved in these issues, which goes back 30 years now, said Secretary Blinken, we have to find cooperative, collaborative responses, because none of us have the ability to effectively deal with these challenges alone. So the United States puts a premium on that more than anything else.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. We'll be right back.